Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to this week's SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. My name is Marty Bennett, president of SMIE Consulting, that's Social Media and International Education Consulting. And each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, I tackle three of the topics in international ed news that seem to be gaining a little traction, and also ones that I think deserve a little bit more attention as far as working professionals in the field go in helping to inform international education strategies, as well as other things that might be useful to developing and refining strategies within your own institutions, and or if you're not in an institution and you're on your own, ways that you can maybe help improve what you're doing in the long term, and helping with strategic planning and things like that. So hopefully you'll find these sessions useful each Wednesday. Today we're going to be tackling three topics that are particularly relevant through the week's news. One of those is growing fallout from the Saudi Arabia Canada row over some human rights violations or human rights comments made by the Canadian Foreign Minister. Next, a more bigger picture view from a couple of leaders in international education. And third, a little bit more positive news on the story that PI News featured recently on global elites who studied abroad and what institutions are doing to help to leverage those. So that's what I hope we'll cover in this week's edition of SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. So thanks for joining me, and let's get right to the first topic. Now, as for those who are familiar what's happened in the happened between Saudi Arabia and Canada last week, it emerged that the foreign ministry in Canada had made some comments about human rights and women's rights leaders in Saudi Arabia that had been arrested recently, coming on the heels of the driving ban that was lifted against Saudi women, or women in Saudi Arabia. And that has led to seemed from the outset a very knee-jerk reaction from the Saudi Arabian government, so where all assets and future plans were frozen between Saudi Arabia and Canada. And the most directly impacting international education was the recall of over 7,000 Saudi students that were in country, in Canada, attending universities there, and how that they needed to leave immediately after the end of the current spring term in Canada. So that's obviously not huge numbers as far as Canadian totals of international students are, with over 300,000 in international students studying in country last year. So the 7,000 Saudi Arabians in and of itself is not a huge drop in the bucket, about 2% of international students currently in Canada. I'm putting a link to the PI article that covers the PI News article that covered the kind of the fallout from the Saudi Arabian government's decision to expel the Canadian ambassador and all the other political fallout from that. But also importantly, it from an international ed perspective, it talks about what the difference is, the obvious huge difference that this decision is making in the lives of those Saudi students that had gone to Canada for study. What's interesting, and it's come out in days after the initial recall from the Saudi Arabian government of its students, was that this, kudos to Alex Usher in Canada for making this, noting this in his research on this topic, is that the impact of this recall is not just government-sponsored or Ministry of Education-sponsored students, it's all Saudi students were instructed to return home or transfer to another country. So the actual specifics of how that and mechanisms, how that's going to work for getting students transferred to other schools or transferred back home to Saudi Arabia, whatever the case may be, that's not yet clear on as to how exactly that's working or going to work. But it does pose incredible difficulties, logistical difficulties, educational difficulties, hardship for Saudi Arabian students who had made the effort. And again, not a whole, a huge number, certainly in comparison to what the UK and the US have in terms of Saudi Arabian students. But their lives of these students are been turned upside down. And the Canadian institutions are obviously concerned, educators at those institutions are concerned about the impact on students' degrees, degree progress, and the physical and psychological damage that might be done by having their education cut off. Many of these Saudi students that are attending, particularly at the graduate level, may also have families that would be starting schools, school if they had their children enrolled in schools while they're studying at universities. So a lot of knock-on effects in terms of what this is going to be. So it's interesting to hear from the Canadian institutions' perspective what's happening. A lot of them are being are very much in the dark as to what to do outside of refunding any monies paid, cancellation fees, that type of thing. The CBIE, the Canadian Bureau for International Education, has confirmed that there is widespread concern about what's happened and how quickly things escalated without any notice, frankly. This action, and one of the data points here that is interesting in the PI article is that the 7,600 Saudi Arabian students, much like in the U.S., they're also had been seeing a drop, particularly since 2013, where they had a high of about 13,800 student study visas were granted to Saudi citizens coming to Canada. So that's there was a further drop from that initial 13,800 back in 2013. Between 2015 and 2017, and it was also a 34% drop there. So numbers were already decreasing between Canada and Saudi Arabia, from Saudi Arabia to Canada. And I think a lot of that has to do with the kind of reconfiguration of government scholarships or Ministry of Education scholarships coming from Saudi Arabia to other parts of the world. So that's perhaps a little bit kind of coloring the debate here. For those that need the link, it's in the comment stream here on the SMIE Consulting Facebook page. So I encourage you to read a little bit more on that. Second story of the day is a bit more of a 30,000 foot view of what's happening in international education at this point. For those of you who have been following news stories related to going back as far as Brexit's election of Donald Trump in the United States, there's been a series of other elections around the world where nationalist and populist candidates have won majorities and become leaders of their countries. And these kind of movements have unsettled, in many places, kind of the status quo of international education, which for a number of decades had been students from other parts of the world where higher education systems were not well developed or limited opportunities for higher education access existed in various countries. There was a migration of students from those countries that did not have the opportunity or access to Western countries like the US, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, English-speaking countries that significantly drew students from their home countries to study at their prominent institutions. And what this article written by Hans DeWitt and Philip Altbach, a couple of the kind of giants in international education, whether you like their particular positions or not, certainly they have had definitely have the perspective on the historical perspective, but also kind of have their fingers on the pulse of some of the big macro trends that are affecting not just U.S. Institutions, but are affecting countries around the world in terms of their higher education opportunities. So they make the points in this Inside Higher Ed article that there's dramatic instability now in international higher education, and I'll posting the link to that story in Inside Higher Ed. That story itself, again, kind of underlies a lot of what we've been talking about. They mentioned also what's happened in Canada recently with Saudi Arabia. But the rise of the nationalist and populist candidates in many countries has had implications in higher education in a number of places. The investments on a macro scale in China to their higher education system has been going on for 10, 15 years now, well over 10, 15 years. And that has led to, we've talked about in the past, the rise of China as a major player, as a destination, not only a sending country, but a destination country for international students, many of which are short-term or semester-long programs where they're basically paying for students to come to China to study and help improve their campus environments and make them more international. They draw not just Western countries that are sending students there for semester or year programs, but within East Asia, East and South Asia, they are becoming a hub. There was an article just the other day about how African students are now seeing China as a destination. And that has much to do with China's broader economic development strategy globally with their investments in infrastructure and other industries in African countries, that now those ties are, those investments are reaping benefits with potential student flows to China. So there's a lot of that going on. You see, obviously, with what's happened in UK with Brexit, so potential declines there, and in the US, obviously, with new student numbers declining in the last year and likely to continue this coming year, this coming fall term. So there are other countries, including China, but also Germany, France, Japan, that are seeing their numbers rise as a result. So what's happened in the US, no need to beat a dead horse with what's happening here with the visa regulations, increase in CVIS fees, bans on visitors from certain countries, the unwelcomeness environment that has been portrayed in so many news stories and in the overall impression of the United States, that has an impact. But we're talking about, when we talk about some bright lights, they mention Canada as a positive exception to the growing negativity. With their positive economic factors, a welcoming policy for skilled immigrants, and an open political climate, as the article states. They have been they've seen an increase, a 20% increase in the last year of international students. But this impact of what Saudi Arabia's decision to pull students out of Canada, what that's going to have an effect on other countries that might have government programs or coming from potentially more authoritarian countries, would they view Canada the same way? So there's a lot of uncertainty, and that I don't think that's gonna stop anytime soon. And certainly the authors Hans DeWitt and Philip Altbeck make that case fairly clearly, that what happens, and they throw a few what ifs out there in terms of what could happen. And particularly if China blocks the study of Chinese nationals in the U.S., like what Saudi Arabia just did with Canada, then what that might mean for U.S. institutions, certainly that would have a much broader impact than anything than the Saudi Arabian Canada example is. The economic benefit impacts of decreases in international student mobility are not just felt in the U.S., but it would be felt globally. This is something that, when you see in the past, political events tended to be blips on the radar, but there seems to be such a sustained number of these blips that it's becoming rather much the trend and the norm that this instability is creating for a lot of institutions, a lot of institutions that frankly don't have the wherewithal or the strategic vision to plan appropriately for their recruitment and are having to rely on, well, let's put all our eggs in the China basket for now, or let's move away from China, let's focus on India or both of those and not have much activity elsewhere in the world. Those kind of institutions are putting themselves obviously at a severe disadvantage and leaving themselves open to more dramatic change in their institutional profiles when it comes to international students and others others might be. Thank you for joining, Lou. Good to see you online and hopefully participating in this conversation. That topic again of the dramatic increase in instability, political instability, and how it's impacting international educators around the world is one that I don't think is going away anytime soon. And again, the keys, I think, to long-term success for any institution in this arena to deal with this instability is to frankly to have a diversified international student recruitment and management plan. Because in the end, if you have all your eggs in one country or a couple of countries that then experience significant political upheaval or government changes that impact student flows or scholarship programs, whatever it might be, you get to the point now where you could face a situation where you drop 20% to 30% in your international student enrollments in one term. If you have significant drops. If you were one of those Canadian institutions that was heavily dependent on Saudi students, how's that going to impact your bottom line as an institution? If you are not diversified, you will suffer the consequences. People will lose jobs as a result. This is the reality of international ed strategies that are very narrow and perhaps too reliant on particular countries. So what are some of the solutions? And diversifying, a lot of folks say that. I've said it a number of times. What does that look like? We could spend a whole workshop on putting together a diverse international student enrollment plan, and that's certainly something that I do through SMIE Consulting. But it requires a long-term commitment from the institution. It requires investment of time, resources, and staff. It requires a long view on developing relationships, partnerships in a number of countries with institutions and countries that make sense for you and your college or university. And the boots on the ground are important, but having a digital strategy as part of that is an important piece of the puzzle that cannot be ignored in this day and age. And frankly, it's good to see institutions starting to get that message and realize that, hey, if we're going to survive as an institution and be considered a serious player internationally, we need to make investments in the right areas. Now, that's a lot said about a topic that, again, we could go on for hours about. What I do want to finish with is the third article today. Coming from another Pi News article. They're doing some really good work here. I love the focus that they have on global and international ed. I'm going to be posting that article now. And it covers a topic that's something I'll be covering in my upcoming Hot Courses article at the end of the month about leveraging global alumni. But this article from the Pi News entitled Alumni in High Places, Global Elites Who Studied Abroad. And it talks about a variety of world leaders, of prominent individuals in the entertainment industry who have studied abroad at some point, whether it's German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who traveled to the Soviet Union in 1974 on an exchange program. She was very proficient in Russian. Whether it's French President Macron, who completed an internship in Nigeria. It's Barack Obama's father, who is an international student from Kenya, coming to the University of Hawaii. There are Rhodes Scholars, Fulbright Scholars, all of these people that have gone on to become leaders in their countries. And this is something that I think institutions, as part of the many layers of an international education strategy, international student recruitment strategy, that students who come to their campuses from abroad who, if they have positive experiences, are well-equipped and educated to meet the challenges that they're going to face when they return home, they can allow that institution another avenue to expand what they do in expanding their recruitment efforts in a particular country. That allows students from that country to have an example, role model, if you will, much like we were talking about with women in STEM a few weeks ago. Part of the challenge that many studies have seen on that issue is that young girls growing up, if they don't have role models that are in those fields that they can look up to in STEM fields, then they don't necessarily go down those roads. And that's something that, as it relates to international education, the same would hold true for students coming from particular countries wanting to come to the United States. If they don't have somebody, it's a harder sell for an institution if they don't have a student from that country, a recent graduate or current student from that country that they can hold up and say, hey, here's what you can do with a degree from our institution. So that international alumni piece of a overall international student recruitment plan and effective strategy is something that I think a lot of institutions, other than the perhaps most selective and prestigious, that have had international alumni involved in their programming, in their admissions process, in terms of interviews and that type of thing. Other than those institutions that maybe have had that experience, working with promoting, using your alumni to international alumni to promote your institution, that's something that the Pi article alludes to and does have a few examples towards the end of international students that have studied abroad and taken what they've learned. There was an award-winning Chinese actress, Jiang Shuying, who studied at the University of East Anglia with Into UEA, and after she finished her studies, returned home and took part in a campaign aiming to inspire Chinese students to follow in her footsteps. Then there are other institutions that have done similar things with recent international alums. And it gives them, again, that whole idea of having a role model or someone that future students can look up to and say, I want to be like that person. I can see myself being a success. So I think there's a look, a lot of folks that U.S. has certainly been a leader in attracting international students for a number of years. And there's, for those who are familiar with Education USA, a few years ago, actually 10 years ago now, they put together a list, a document called Foreign Students Today, Foreign Students Yesterday, World Leaders Today, something along those lines. And it had lists of everybody from the King of Jordan, King Abdullah, to former President of the Republic of Georgia, Shapashvili, to former UN Chief Kofi Annan, that all studied in the United States at one point. So I think that those kind of examples, not everybody is going to have these amazing global phenoms that are going to be alums of their institutions that they can use to promote. But what they can do is they can first keep in touch with your international alumni, which in and of itself is no easy task, and one at which many institutions or many international admissions offices can really struggle to find some traction on how to develop that. I know at a recent institution, I've worked at five different institutions in the U.S. and the U.K. At only two of those was there even a list of international alumni that the alumni office had developed. And only in one of those schools was there actually a dedicated person in the alumni office working with international students or international graduates. And frankly, that's something that was a rarity and probably a one-off in that person who had that role in the alumni office was a former director of the international admissions and services operations. So he kind of retired into that job in the alumni office. It was a real passion for him. So he developed that there at that institution. So I think the alumni piece is really, really important. And Sana, thank you for getting on again. Good to see you back. And you've made the comment that the alumni piece is important, not just for students, but also for parents. And that's an absolutely essential point, Sana. Thank you for bringing that up. It's the alumni who have come back to their countries in particular that have become leaders there, or business leaders, or community leaders, political leaders, whatever it might be. They are people that may be in the circles of future students' parents, and that's something that you can't put a price tag on in terms of what value that has for an institution when they can hold up in, as an example, a role model of this could be my son or daughter in a few years if they go to the United States, they go to this institution and get their degree. And absolutely right, Sana, in terms of how international alumni can and should be a part of any institution's international enrollment strategies. So a lot we could go on further on that topic with. And for those of you who are following this issue, certainly I'll be covering this in an upcoming article for Hot Courses at the end of the month, end of August here, just putting the final touches on that piece now. So stay tuned. That's part of our content marketing series we've been doing for international admissions folks. So keep an eye out for that. But I do want to say thank you for joining me today for this week's Midweek Roundup. We'll be here again next Wednesday. For those of you who have sons and daughters going back to school this week or in the coming weeks, good luck. And it'd be nice to have a little quiet around the house with the kids going back to school, I'm sure. I'm fortunate enough that I get to pick up and drop off my son. Just started third grade today, so really enjoying that time, seeing him grow up, and that nervous excitement of the first day of school is always something to remember. So great to see you all, and look forward to connecting with you again in the near term. Have a great day.